Okay, good. I can't remember what the roles are for today.
I'm Michelle, moderator.
Okay.
And I'm recorder.
Well, as the moderator, I guess, I think that what we want to do today is take a look and go through the feedback that we got back from piloting the questions and see if there's any alterations that we want to make and maybe discuss them. Does that sound about right to you?
Yep.
First of all, Dale, thank you so much for putting it up on the WISE site. That's going to be a lot easier afterwards rather than typing in responses. If we can accumulate some that way, that'll be great. And thank you for actually doing the calculation and realizing that the difference in the standard deviation is really imperceptible.
Yeah, I think that's a problem with the very first question about the standard deviation. I mean, Bob made some suggestions for making it a little more salient. We could go there. The question on the mean, I think, is quite good. I was looking at the answers that people give to that one, but the standard deviation is a lot trickier. I suppose the issue is, how do we isolate what we want to measure from this? You know, what is the issue?
Right. Well, this one is one on, we're trying to get an idea of the understanding of distribution here. So the question on which class is the standard deviation greater, how did you decide this? I think what we're looking at there is less, did they get the right one, and more looking at their reasoning on how did they decide this. What kinds of spread are they taking into account? Just the range, or are they looking at the distance to the mean? What's your feeling on this? I think this was your question originally.
Yeah. Well, we added all of the A's and B's and parts with the standard deviations and things along the way. But I agree that it's much more interesting to me, part B, how did you decide this, mm-hmm. than it is. And I think that's where we need to be looking.
Now, what are we looking for there? As far as trying to get that in terms of kind of a prerequisite to understanding sampling distributions, what is it here that we're trying to get at? Are we just trying to see, do they focus on standard deviation as a measure of distance to the mean, or are they just looking at range as measures of spread? Is that what we're trying to get from those first two?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, again, for the standard deviation, it is pretty tricky. When we get something that's so close, I think that even the good students could be frustrated by it, feeling that they should be able to look at it and see what the answer is, and, boy, they must be missing something.
Bob here. I haven't looked at the responses that Michelle sent. I've got that up, but I haven't really looked at it. And I was just looking at the ones that Tisha sent from Winona State. And have you guys looked at that at all?
Yeah.
Of the, there were six people who responded. Three of them chose black, three of them chose pink. So you got a 50-50 there. And then if you look at how do they make the decision, interesting to look at those explanations. Some of them I don't even consider to be explanations.
Most
they're just,
of them.
They're just statements. But what's interesting is that, or something that's interesting to me is that here you have two situations where the standard deviation is really about the same for both distributions, really darn close. And these people, and these students, a lot of them are just saying something about being skewed, but no reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
But, it is really hard to come up with a good reason here. Why would you think one is greater than the other? Student 8 is the only one that really nails it. Other people, I don't think we're getting much information from this, essentially, I guess is my
opinion. Okay. Well, let me just throw this out at you, is that this item might be interesting the way it is, but maybe you should change it. But
yeah, I think we should. Yeah, go ahead.
Student, I don't know that it's of. So the ethical thing would be that the right answer is they're both about the same, and And most students won't be able to put their finger on that without actually calculating it all out. And so what kind of feedback would you give to the students? The majority of them are going to be wrong because they're going to pick pink or black. But at the same time, what's interesting about these responses to me is that nobody's saying, like, well, I picked black as having a larger standard deviation because it really is skewed, and so it seems like those values would be drawn, you know, are further away from the center, so I think it would have a larger standard deviation compared to that symmetric distribution.
There's a couple, in the ones that I have, there's a couple students who got it that.
Okay. Or another type of argument would be for the pink group having the larger standard deviation, saying, yeah, it's symmetric, but, you know, the black group's got a larger proportion of values close to what I think is its mean compared to the symmetric distribution in the pink group. It looks like that's more spread out. I think it would have a larger standard deviation. So are you interested in the nature of the argument that the student might give? Is that what you're interested in, or are you just interested in them getting it right or wrong?
I think we'd like to have the argument, and I mean, that's much more interesting information there, but the problem now, just looking at the answers, is there's very little information for us there. You know,
I think there's some information in the ones that I typed up. I started to get, you know, there's a couple students here who said that how far are we from the mean? The black is less skewed than pink. The values are close to the mean, so the standard deviation should be smaller. A couple people just looked at the range, so you could tell that they weren't considering distance to the mean. So there's a little bit, and then I got sorry, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
But one
clear distractor is the range. You know, that they can focus on the range. So that's maybe a nice thing to keep in there.
But I guess that was what the question Bob asked. I'm interested in the argument. I think that's what I'm trying to ask here. Is what part of this are we really hoping that they get? What would we consider to be a really good answer for this? That they actually, if we make it so that the standard deviations are a bit different, making some alterations that Bob had suggested in a previous email. What would we consider good here? That they've talked about the distance to the mean, and they've talked about the skewness of the data a bit?
In my mind, I'm thinking about deviation from the mean.
Yeah. A tricky thing to deal with is with the skewed distribution, some of the deviations from the mean are larger, and it's a squared deviation that becomes important. Would we want them to pick up on that?
And when we look further down, because we start this question by asking which one has more spread, then we ask them to get a general, make a statement about the distribution, which pretty much everybody got right, except for some of the students I had got, I think they had learned positive and negative, and so then they weren't sure which was left and which was right. So when they tried to put both, sometimes they say opposite things. But most of them got that pretty well. But what I found interesting is then when you get down to D, when we say which class did better on the quiz, we're looking more that they're understanding kind of the center as doing better on the quiz, I think. So there we're trying to get them to look at the mean. Do we want to switch it around at all? Because if they're looking at the mean early, then they might consider standard deviation more in terms of spread from the mean.
Can you guys hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to talk before. I didn't think I'd be heard. I think I was on mute.
We didn't.
You didn't hear.
Well, sorry.
Thank you. So I wonder if, responding to the question about how we want the students to word it, I think that can be really hard to evaluate unless we offer them, you know, a couple options, like which of the following is the reason why. Mm-hmm. You know, because if we require students to say something about deviation from the mean, and they say something else, does that really mean, does that really indicate that they don't understand it? Or are they just not articulating it well?
So, do something like the line of process that Bob and Joan and Beth did. We start with these so that we can come up with some good multiple choice questions, and then see from those if they can pick out the kind of the best reasoning. For example, here we could make one of them, you know, because the pink because it has a bigger range, or the black because the distances to the mean are greater. Or is that what you mean?
That's what I mean, and I don't know if it's right, but that's the idea I'm throwing out there. I mean, the downside is that then we're, you know, offering suggestions that which might suggest things to these students that they're not thinking.
Yeah, and I think one other thing that we have to consider here, you know, I took this into my colleague's classroom, and he offered me some class time to let them do that. If I'd had the chance to sit down with these students, and if they're not articulating it, I can ask them even more. And we talked a little bit about this last time. You don't want to lead too much, but dig their thinking out a little more. And I like the idea of somehow, at some point, writing the multiple choice questions, but I think we need to leave it open-ended a little bit longer to get maybe some more suggestions from the students before we're ready to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, too. When I went around, I gave this to a class. It was their very last day of class.
Mm-hmm.
They took the chaos test, and then after that, they took this one. And it was about, you know, 30, or like, I don't know what that is, like almost 90-something degrees in the computer lab because the air conditioning was broken. So I did bring in, I went to the cafeteria, I bought a bottle of cold water for every student and a candy bar. And I said, I know it's really hot and you don't want to do this, but you're helping me in my research. I really appreciate it. And I really stressed to them that I was less interested in having them complete the whole quiz and more interested that they really answer the parts on the reasoning. How did you decide this? Because I explained to them that we were trying to write better questions, and so we want to understand their reasoning. And I had them start at different sections. Somebody had suggested, I think it was Dale, and that seemed to work pretty well, where they could feel like, rather than feel a stress that they had to finish, they could kind of go at their own pace but really write something. So that worked, but I did go around a little bit, and when sometimes somebody just said, well, because you can just see it from the graph. And I said, well, you know, can you tell me more about what you mean by that? And then they would say something, but they didn't write as much as they said. So you're right. I think interviews, you really do get a lot more information.
Bob here, I'm going to just interject some thoughts. If you do interviews, if you think about an interview and you don't have to do every single thing as an interview with students, but they could respond and not be able to articulate things, and that would be some data that you should probably take interest in. And then you could move to more, in an interview, you could move more to having sets of responses that you could, you know, what about this argument? What about this argument? Or you could try to pull more out of them. But first, see how they can articulate, and if they can't, I think that's some interesting information right then and there. How many students can articulate this at the end of a course or at this point in the course? Then, with some help, can they articulate it? And then, if you give them a certain type of statement, can they recognize it as a valid, you know, some type of valid reasoning about whatever the problem is? And so it's three different pieces of information that might tell you about where that student is in the development of their understanding of what's being assessed.
Mm-hmm. Right. One could argue that a big goal for us is to have our students be able to articulate. So having this chance to explain things is really important. If we just go to the multiple choice questions, we will lose that.
Well, I think there's a question out there of, by the end of a first course in statistics, can the majority of students really articulate these things we're expecting?
I'll bet not.
Or is it that they're able to recognize Yeah. You know, what is the state of the majority of students when they get to the end of this course?
I was commenting earlier, the webinar a few hours ago, the focus was on being able to explain, interpret, present results. You know, so focus of the course, it was not at all on the sort of the mechanics of things. It was much more on how do you explain things, interpret them.
Mm.
And I think that is ordinarily a big weakness for students who come out of statistics is that they aren't able to do that.
So as far as developing an instrument, it'd be nice if your instrument was sensitive to whether an instructional approach do students who were or are more likely to or not as likely to be able to articulate what we're expecting them to be able to state. So that would be a nice characteristic of your instrument, and I think through interviewing you might be able to develop that in that direction. I was just going to make one more comment. So I've looked at this first item. I've looked at the responses, and I haven't, you know, haven't really taken it all in. But the responses that Michelle sent and the responses that Tisha sent, and I think it's just interesting what they don't articulate, what they don't say. And you'd be making a whole bunch of assumptions about why that is, as Michael brought up, but it's still some interesting data.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think this is great. I'm really glad you guys did that. Well, just to get to sort of what we do here, I like the suggestion maybe of starting with the second question, you know, which class did better? In some ways, it's a simpler question, and there is a clearer answer, and then maybe going to the standard deviation issue, you know, the one on which class did better. There, some people were fooled by how many scores there were. You know, the class that had more scores, they thought did. There was one response. You know, which class did better? They said, well, you know, the one with the symmetric distribution looks better because it's more. They did a better job.
Well, I'm looking here at the ones that I did, and it does. There's one student, Lavinia, in row 15, where she says she counted the number of people between 6 and 9 correct, and Pink has a higher number of answers correct. So that's where she's not reasoning on the distribution at all. She's just counting the frequencies and ignoring whether they have the same amount or not. But most of them did seem to get the idea that. To answer this question, they looked at the average number of correct answers, and most of them said something related to that for the black. So that does seem to be an easier question.
Yeah.
And more, well, as you know, the people are used to reasoning on means and very unaccustomed to dealing with variability. Mm-hmm. So how would you feel if we moved that up to an earlier spot and talked about the standard deviation lower down?
Yeah, I think it would be good.
Yeah, I don't really care. It's fine with me.
I think it makes sense. It'll also encourage them, as I think Tisha said, to maybe frame the standard deviation in terms of the mean also.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I interject something? I know we only have an hour.
Yeah.
We don't want to talk about the first question the whole time, but getting back to what Michael and Bob both said combined, do we at some point need to sit down and, you know, if we were to interview and you have a student that can't express their thoughts, do we want, like Michael mentioned, these options, potential explanations to pose to them and say, well, can you tell me what you think of this argument? Do you think that's something that we're going to want to do soon?
Yes, I think it's a good idea. And also because if we're going to start, if we're eventually going to try to move towards multiple choice questions, trying to write up some of those options is already a good way of for us to refine this and move in that direction.
And I think that, you know, right now it's great, we're collecting pilot data, but at some point we're going to want to do this a little bit better and involve some interviews. And if I'm giving an interview, I'm going to want to be as prepared as I can trying to take information out of the kids.
Well, could we make that a goal before we meet at JSM, is that after our discussions to day, we try and go back and write up some possible interview solutions or possible multiple choice solutions for these. And then we get to GISM, we can talk about them.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, that, for that goal of coming up with good multiple choice options, this is really useful, and interviewing would help too, I suppose.
We could try, I mean, based on some of the feedback that we've gotten for today, already there's some ideas for this first question, just in our discussion, talk about the range, talk about the somehow use the shape, or talk about the distance to the mean, that we could write up three different options already for that.
I wonder if we want to consider beyond just multiple choice even, like, you know, there kind of seem to be a series of postulates that people are putting out there. I wonder if we, you know, another idea would be to ask them, you know, which of these are true? You know, the skew affects the standard deviation, or I don't know, I'm not sure how to frame that, but, you know, it's not just one multiple choice question that would capture the correct views or fallacies that students have about standard deviation.
So one could pose a question like, the distribution with the greater range has the will always have the greater standard deviation, and explain, you know, true or false, and explain. So if they come up a counterexample or the reasoning for thinking that would be true, or a skewed distribution will always have a larger standard deviation.
Right.
If two distributions have the same mean, a skewed distribution will have the larger standard deviation, or something like that. Yeah. But the idea would be to focus them on each of the issues that they should consider, and to see how they're thinking about it. Well, a question is, do we want to make changes to these distributions? We had some suggestions. Bob made some suggestions, one of them where we keep the n's the same, another one not. What are your thoughts on just the questions as we're posing, the distributions as we're showing them?
I think we should make some changes. I think having the standard deviation be virtually identical is a mistake. I actually like the idea of not having the same range,
mm-hmm.
because I think that helps distinguish between, do they only consider spread to be range, or do they consider it to be spread around the middle? So I like it as an eventual distractor. What do you think?
Sample size.
What was that, Dale? I'm sorry.
How about sample size? Should we keep the n's the same? Or, I mean, one advantage of having unequal sample sizes is then that's another possible interpretation where they just are counting how many scores are in a particular value.
Although that seems to be, if we look ahead at the variation questions 1 and 2, we're getting at some of these ideas in those questions also.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually going to say, I wonder whether we want to reorder the questions, because, you know, V2 would be fairly straightforward. V1 is a fairly straightforward question also. Maybe V1, V2 first, then V1, and then V1. So we really start build on their understanding, and we don't rely just on question D1 to find out everything we can about their knowledge of standard deviation.
Yeah.
You know, in some way, I really like the V questions. Maybe we should just not even include the question about standard deviation on D1. Maybe we don't need it.
I would actually argue that we should keep something in there, because the question is all about kind of looking at distribution overall.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of keeping some measure of standard deviation in there, where there's more context to that than, say, the V1 and V2. I kind of like keeping them all together.
I would also say, in terms of reliability, doesn't it add a lot to the reliability of the measure if we have measures of the same thing and can make sure that they get it right on both before we say that they understand it?
Well, I'd agree with that, if we can get a good question there.
Well, it's 10:35, so shall we move on to the next questions and then...
Yeah, good idea.
So that we can do a little bit on each of them to make sure we get through at least part of everything. And then we can come back to that if we got time at the end. How's that?
Sounds good.
Yep.
Should we go on to D2?
I thought that one is good. Maybe question part C, option C, we should remove the word about. And my reasoning there is that's a very loose term that you could say, well, they're about the same, and be right. You know, it depends on what you mean by about. But if we would just say the strength of evidence is the same, that makes it a little less likely to choose it.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I was always kind of interesting when three people say A and three people say B and two people say C,
yeah,
at least
good.
In fish responses. Like, that's a pretty divergent set of answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you compare that, I know we're supposed to be off of question D1, but D1C, for example, you know, on Tisho, 7 out of 8 got it right that it was symmetric. I guess I would ask the question, does that really tell us anything? Whereas this one, I feel like, you know, which one is strongest actually is informative, and then the explain your response makes it even clearer.
Right.
But I agree with Dale's comment. I think that's a good idea.
I agree on the symmetric and less, the one you were just saying about the D1 one. Pretty much everybody got them both right, symmetric and less skewed. You know, everybody knew the difference between the two of them. I'm not sure. I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure that part is really tells us much.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to
omit it is what you're suggesting.
Huh. Well, actually, well, Michelle.
Yeah.
You had quite a few students who said positively skewed.
And so does Tisha.
Yeah. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. I see 5.
Oh, you're right.
So actually, they got skewed versus symmetric for the most part. Most of them
didn't know the right direction.
But what you see for literacy, there's a confusion about positive and negative. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, and also between right and left. I can't remember whether the students I had learned left and right and then saw it in positive and negative or vice versa, but they were confused about which was which. Okay, good point.
I don't think we need to throw that one out yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to D2?
Part C doesn't do much, but the second part, for the pink class, it doesn't do much, but for the black class, it's just a literacy question. What does positively versus negatively skewed mean?
Right. So if we go back to D2, I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 that answered C. To this one,
yeah,
about the same. And Tisha, you had 2.
2.
So you both had about a third, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's just such an easy. It doesn't tell us. Well, it doesn't necessarily encourage them to be more analytic. You can look and see, yeah, they're about the same, and you're right. But we want them to look more closely at the trade-off between variability and the difference in the means.
I have one student said C. This is in row 5. Well, I thought it was pretty reasonably well done when he says it depends how you look at it because both show the same option. Well, that's not very clear, but psychology results are more spread out than those from biology. Question isn't precise enough to fully conclude which one would have stronger evidence. We can say that biology mean in both terms have been higher, but 10 sample seems to be small. So somebody's looking at the spread a little bit, looking at the sample size a little bit, saying that the problem is in the question.
Yeah.
So even the C's, I think that you do get some reasoning.
Yeah, one person says, well, the difference in the means is about the same, and they don't. Into the variability.
And to me, that shows that they don't really under. I think that's information. Cause I think it shows that they don't really understand everything there is in that distribution.
That is exactly the kind of answer we're looking for that says they don't get it all. Mm-hmm. As Tisha just said.
Yeah. So you just want to take out the word about for C?
That's what I was suggesting. I think we still would get people choosing that answer, but it might encourage a little more in-depth answering. It just seems like an easy out.
Yep, that's fine with me if we take out the word about.
Okay. But it's a good question. One of our,
we're about the same, the two outliers.
Yeah,
yours is, since I'm looking at yours, is there's some of them talk just about spread, some of them talk just about the mean, some of them don't say anything. They just explain their reasoning is they're both about the same.
Yep, they repeat the question.
What would we like them to say on this one?
I thought there was one particularly good one that looked at both. Where was it?
There's one, the Winona State Group, student 8. They say, the distance between the lines aren't all that different, but psych has a little more spread.
That's the one.
But when you look at, they chose C and said, the spread doesn't matter at all, it's the line I'm looking at. Well, that's it. That shows that even though they say, two sentences later, that the psychology has more spread, that they didn't factor that into their decision at all. And so I would not think that that was a good response. Even though they mentioned spread, they didn't mention it in the correct context.
Right. Saying that it doesn't matter would not be
yeah.
what we're looking for. Okay.
Yeah, you know, well, I was just going to interject that in sometimes when students are giving a, quote, explanation or their reasoning, they're really just describing what they see, and it may not be a reasoned thought that they're giving you. They just might be saying, look, psychology has more spread than biology. Mm-hmm. And so you got to really try to, that's where an interview might help, but you got to try to piece out, look for other evidence. Are they really considering, is that more spread? Is it really weighing in their decision? And that student 8 from Winona, I would say, yeah, they notice it, but it sure looks like from the rest of what they stated, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like you first started off. But that's something to maybe be aware of, that often when we ask students to explain or give their reasons, they describe. They aren't really reasoning. They're more observing and saying what they see. And it's not necessarily a reasoned out argument. And I think that's an indication that they're not to a place where we would like them to be when they're doing that.
I think that's a really good point. And I think we sometimes like to get fooled by that. You know, oh, good, they hit what we're looking for and give them the benefit of the doubt when they may not really have it.
Student row 13 on mine for that one. Alexander says, the results are closer together in biology, yet it has the same change as the psych class. Therefore, the change has greater effect on overall scores.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
good answer.
You're almost there, but you just there's you know, it is a word I like to stay away from.
But it's pretty good.
But it's
pretty good. Yeah.
And that's a situation if you were in an interview, you could say, what is it, right?
What is it, right, yeah.
And I would also ask the question, given most of Michelle's students are international, is this an English problem?
Good question.
I don't know. I don't, because it's not my class, so I don't really know Alexander. So I'm not sure what his next. But, yeah, very few of my students are native English speakers. And I actually remind them regularly before any quizzes and exams to avoid using it or this at all in any of their answers. But if they ever think of to use it or this, I'd rather them use whatever they're referring to at the risk of being repetitive, because they tend to do that a lot. So I don't know whether it's an English problem, but I mean, I feel like this kid is close. has the right idea, and I think you're right. If in an interview we find out whether in fact they really are close or
mm-hmm.
or not so close.
You know, if you guys look at from Michelle's data, row number 10, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I fully understand the answer, but I'm wondering, there's a couple other answers I was reading through where I'm going, if they're not understanding the question that you're asking, and what they're answering is which class, the biology or the psychology class, did better. Because maybe I'm overinterpreting, but this person's saying very high mark and very low marks for psych. I don't know if they mean my biology is concentrated. I don't know. I'm just wondering if some people...
I don't know what that person means.
I'm wondering if some people might look at it and say, and think that the question is, did psychology do better or did biology do better?
Biology do better, yeah.
And... in general, the biology scores are higher than the psychology, or the means are higher than what you see in psychology. Therefore, I choose biology.
You think we should emphasize the word difference? I mean, we could put it in bold or a bigger font or something. Is there stronger evidence that there was a difference in average performance? But I think you're right. I saw other places, too, where I thought people misinterpreted the question. In general, people misinterpret questions to make it easier, to make it a question they can answer.
To fit something that they understand.
Yeah.
But what do you think about this, in general, this question? It seems like the types of answers we're getting are fairly informative. I think the question's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, and I think the question is, honestly, I think it's clearly worded. That there was a difference in average performance between their fall and spring classes.
It's there, but if people...
Yeah, it's there. It's a matter of if they read it well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question's okay.
And each of the choices also say evidence of a difference. Maybe we've underlined the class. Maybe we should underline the difference or neither.
I think if we underline difference, they still could interpret that as a difference between psychology and biology.
A semester difference.
I think we can leave it as is and just remind them to please read carefully.
And this might be something to be aware of in an interview to see if there are some students who are misinterpreting the question. I don't think that makes it a bad question. It may be more indicative of, or raises the question, why wouldn't they understand what's being asked? Could be a language issue, could be a conceptual understanding issue, and some probing and interviews might help get at that.
Yeah, because when it says, you know, between their fall and spring classes, it doesn't say between the psychology and biology classes.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems clearly worded.
I think it's pretty clear. Should we go on to V1?
Go ahead.
V1, V2?
Basically, the question works very well, I think. You know, it is worded well, but a few people just miss the key point there.
So V1?
Yeah.
And actually, this brings me to another question. I started drafting an email to Dale and never got back to it after you had sent out the WISE link, Dale.
Yeah.
Is it some of these questions, particularly these in particular, we've just picked out from that somebody else actually created?
Yeah.
Where is an appropriate place to give credit to the origin of these questions? How does that work? Bob, maybe you can answer that.
Huh. Well, like this question V1, mm-hmm. If you got that from the artist item database, which I think you did, or you got it from me, you have our permission.
Artist. I can't remember. I have to go back and check.
So you have to go check that. You have permission to use them, and you just want to note that in anything you write up. you know.
Okay. Would it be sufficient to put that on the first page, or should it be with each question? It would be a little cumbersome probably to cite every question as it's presented. Maybe.
Yeah, on the first page or last page.
Yeah.
I think that's
okay,
fine.
We thank the following for providing or inspiring questions on used in this exam, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably put the reference to the question number two. I'm thinking of like photography books that I've seen where they say in the back, you know, photograph one, you know, the following photograph taken from the New Zealand Aquarium,
yeah,
one,
yeah.
And six, you know.
Okay, yeah, I might need some help in finding those citations for the ones that we have here. A lot of them came just from artists, I think.
Yeah.
Also, while we're on that, on the very first page, I had just some draft material, too, of, you know, who's involved and so forth. And if you could take a look at that and give me some feedback, what you think is appropriate there. Yeah, you know, we probably don't need to put the abnormally distributed name on there, although it's kind of cute. But whatever you think. At this point, you know, it's not at all open to the public. It's just for us. But if we like it, we can put it up and see what kind of responses we get.
Well, I'm also thinking just along those lines is that what format, when you put things in there, the format that we get the answers back in, because just looking here, I did it, I'm sort of an Excel maniac, so I went directly to Excel because anything that I do, I feel like I should organize it there. And Tisha did it right under the questions, which also made a lot of sense. But it would be nice eventually when we start to get more of a mass of this to have a common format to look at the
questions in. I was going to offer to just take mine and add them to your Excel sheet if that is so they're in one place for all of us to look at.
Yeah, I think Excel is a good format. It's easily transferable into other programs then too if we want. I think from the Y site, if we do this, we will be able to put them into an Excel sheet also.
Okay, well, that was what I was wondering. Is there from there what format we can get it in so that we can?
Yeah, it comes out as I think tab delimited string, and so when from there it can go into Excel quite easily.
Okay. Well, should we go ahead and let's continue with the questions and then come back to this because we don't have a lot of time left. So V1, looking back, so it was about half and half between A and B, but the reasoning was interesting in some points. So it seems to me that it was a pretty good question. What do you think?
I'm sorry, which question number?
V1.
Okay.
V1B, where they explain their choice. Hmm. About half the responses said A had, well, maybe less than half, said A had the greater standard deviation. The other said B had the greater standard deviation. Nobody said they had the same.
And I think that's the same case
for
Tisha's students, too.
Yeah.
No,
a couple said equal.
Two people said equal, right?
Yeah, I've got them both here up on the screen.
Yeah. I'm going to just point out that one thing that's nice about the way you've got the data, Michelle, it's nice how Tisha has it because I can see the item.
That's why I did it.
but when you go to number 15, person number 15, Lavinia, mm-hmm. And what's nice is you've got both responses to V1 and V2.
Mm-hmm.
If you read her V1, I'd go, well, that sounds like pretty good reasoning. Then you read V2 and you go, she's not sure because they've got the same range.
Right.
So now that gives me a different story about Lavinia than if I'd only said, she got number one right.
Yeah, number 11. Susanna looks really good on both of them. Well, wait a second. What did she pick for V2?
No, she picked A.
Never mind.
So she's declaring the same reason, but she hasn't reasoned it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or something's going on there.
Right. And student 10, who's Facebook calling us an idiot for even asking the question because it's written on top of the graph.
See, you gave it away.
And but not recognizing that's not the right number for the standard deviation. Right.
It's a literacy thing again.
And that's at the very last day of the first semester.
I didn't even notice that. That's funny.
So I think that those two questions give us pretty good information about how much they understand about the standard deviation.
Yeah, I agree. You know, person number 10, too, how the two questions are divorced from each other or separated from each other. On the second question, they say the bigger gap between numbers results in the bigger standard deviation. And yet on the first one, they don't pay attention to that.
Right. That's because we didn't give them the answer on the second one.
Let me see.
I'd be curious how their answers here relate to the sampling standard distribution question we talked about in the first one that we discussed, D1.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Is that number 10? D1, number 10. Sorry, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, just in terms of the questions, I think those two questions are really good, the D1 and D2. And working well, we're getting a lot of good explanation.
So should we go on to F1? Okay. By the way, I'm realizing that I have zoomed all of these up to all my Excel sheets are viewing at 200% because I was typing late and I couldn't see very well anymore. So if you go to Zoom, the answers are a lot smaller, take up a lot less space. Okay, we're on sampling candy here.
I actually thought overall they did pretty well on this one.
I did too.
Me too. Alex was too perfect. They all got that idea. And a lot of people said things about, that second one, Beverly, was really unlikely to get only one red.
Yeah.
That one through, and that was the, didn't we change that one? Didn't we have zero or something?
We had zero earlier, but even one. I think that's a good key there that students will find that shows they know what they're doing.
Right.
And I'm probably reading way too much into this, making it up in my own mind, but I just felt that at least with the Winona State students for sure, and I'm looking at Michelle's and I see the same thing, they were willing to talk a lot more on this question. And I don't know if it's because we don't throw any words out like standard deviation or something like that. And this is just a situation, explain your reasoning. Do you think there's anything to that? Is it just me?
Interesting question. I wonder whether we're also asking a couple different concepts here.
Mm-hmm.
They can talk about independence. They can talk about sampling variability. They can talk about probabilities. And so there's more to discuss, maybe.
Yeah, that could be. I was just surprised because I had read through all the other questions, and there were a lot that didn't even answer them. And when I got to this one, I was like, well, geez, everybody gave an answer. And
yeah. Well, and to answer this one, they have to talk about two people that they rule out, at least. Like two people. Most people did a pretty good job. Well, they talk about all three of the people, actually, all three. So that takes more space, too.
I like the way this question is worded. I think it's good.
I think so, too. Should we go on to the next one?
Okay. Yeah.
Go on to S2 and S2 and then S3. This is an interesting one. A lot of people had Shannon and Claire as yours did.
No, mine. One person said no one, and everyone else was Shannon.
And mine, there were a lot of Shannon and Claire. That setting up a booth outside was okay. It was random. Whose sample is most likely to be representative? Just about everybody got that. But I'm guessing, looking at the answers, I'd be interested in talking to the instructors on this one. I'm guessing that the instructor that at Winona State talked a lot more about random sampling and good sampling than the one at Monaco, given the quality of the answers of the two. I thought they were much better from Winona State.
I'm guessing they talked a lot about convenient sampling.
Right.
And I didn't misspell those words, just so you all know.
Well, I like conveyance. I think it's nice and French sounding.
I actually did do a little spelling editing as I went through these.
Maybe I should have, but
you could all read them. kept the words, but I did do some spelling editing. But I think it's a good question also because you do get a feel for whether they've actually talked much about this, and I think it's a topic that isn't discussed enough in the introductory. Lots of times we start with, we have a sample, rather than talking a lot about what are good ways to get a sample. So I rather like this one.
A possible different format would be to have for each one we could ask, is this a, you know, is this good or random, not random, and why, so that they would actually respond to each one of them. A lot of people just pick Shannon, which is, you know, the right answer, but don't say anything about what's wrong with the others.
Mm-hmm. In Michelle's set, it's interesting that people picked Shannon and Claire.
Yeah.
And they do comment on that.
Mm-hmm. I got a kick out of the first student said that, in fact, putting the names in the hat is not such a good idea anyway, because you have a longer name, you get bigger tickets probably, and more likely.
Yeah.
Which is true if they didn't cut the piece of paper evenly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What I thought was interesting in mine, the idea of random. One of, you know, you pick a random sample. If you kind of randomly pass and get people walking by you, that's
yeah.
random.
Yeah.
Which is in that, you know, we talked about the use of the word random being used for many different things. But I think I wouldn't switch it to ask for each one because I think in their reasoning, they do say why they don't pick the other ones, like, you know, a couple of them said Jake and Adam are biased because they've only got specific groups, or I think they kind of get at it. I think it would be long if we asked for every single one of them what was the problem.
That's true. Yeah, presumably come up with Shannon, they would have had to look at the others and reject them, although we just don't have information on why they rejected them.
If you were going to focus on something, I'm wondering if picking this thing in Michelle's group that I know it's not your class, but people from your school, that they chose Claire and Shannon, and some of them kind of indicating they think that that's an unbiased approach that Claire used. It would be interesting to ask Tisha's group, for example, the Winona group, what about Claire? Why isn't that an unbiased? Just to see what. Since that seems to be a common one in the Monaco group.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at, and one of mine is a row six, Nathaniel. He says that Shannon and Claire are both random.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that's most likely to be representative is Shannon because she doesn't, she's selecting students in the whole rather than those in a specific class or leaving at a specific time.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets the idea where the bias is there, but he still considers Claire to be a random method, just not a very good random method.
Right. Yeah, it just comes down to the word random, that in some definitions it is random.
Well, we're almost out of time, so I'm not sure how reliable my computer watch is. My computer clock. I've got 11:03.
It's a little fast.
Oh, yeah.
About 5 minutes fast.
5 minutes.
About 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. So on S2, then, any suggestions for changing, or should we leave it?
I think we'll get good information as is.
I like it, and I think Bob's suggestion if we do an interview.
Yeah.
Right. To ask a little bit more information is a good one. Why don't we try S3 because S3 got quite a variety of responses. How about, both Tisha's group and my group, there was quite a good bit of variety. What are we trying to get at in this one?
I suppose the independence of observations, that one observation has no influence on the next one, so that getting six B's in a row is just as likely as two G's and three B's, so forth. But I'm not sure everybody interpreted that way. It's, I think the distractor interpretation is to think, does that look like a reasonable outcome? They don't pick up on the sequence.
Should we put that in bold?
Maybe.
Or underline it somehow?
Put what in bold?
The exact sequences.
Or maybe even just make it explicit, like they wrote down for each birth, they wrote down something to make it concrete.
Right.
I get, a lot of the answers I get is that it has to do with the idea that you shouldn't have six boys because there's 50%, you should have about 50% girls. There's quite a few.
Yeah. Another thing you're getting is that couple of the students in both groups see three as being more random.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they're expecting to see a local picture of what they consider to be random, no pattern, and it also has the 50-50 split.
Yeah.
I wonder if we want to maybe change a little bit of the answer in 2 versus 3, because both of them have a 50-50 split.
Mm-hmm. But 3 appears more random to some of them.
Right. I mean, I don't know if that's going to help us discern answers or knowledge a little better, but
mm-hmm.
I would also say it's unclear to me what the use of that word exact means.
Mm-hmm.
Which of the following exact sequences?
Could just say sequences, huh?
Well, which of the following ordered sequences, maybe?
Huh?
Or something to imply that the order is the order that they came out in, but I mean, if we wanted... It was unclear to me what the word exact really means.
Yeah. What about just which of the following sequences of boys and girls is least likely?
It could work, too.
Well, we want them to make clear those ordered sequences.
Yeah, maybe up in the second sentence where it says the sex of the first six babies born last year was recorded in order of birth, one could underline that or emphasize order of birth.
I like that.
Fine with me.
Okay, and then we could take out the word exact, which of the following sequences?
Yep, that sounds good to me.
Okay. All right. Well, in our negative 1 minute.
Are there other things we have on the agenda to talk about besides finishing this up?
I have one thing I want to mention.
And next meeting, too. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The JSM presentation's not too far away anymore. And I think that Bob is going to want some slides. What is it, the 14th of July, Bob?
15th
of July?
Somewhere around
and
there.
So I guess if any of you have started a lit review on whatever topic you had been reading on, if you could send that my way, it would be great. And if you have suggestions about what our group should include, I was planning on, I think I've sent everyone the outline. And the only thing that we haven't really talked much about is this pilot data. And so I'll try to take some time this weekend to go through it, too, and think if there's anything here that we could add to our presentation as well. It's just a starting point. Does that sound reasonable?
Sounds
yeah.
good.
Yeah, sure. I've done some work on doing some write-up for variability, so I will send that to you.
Thank you. And so I will probably this weekend send something to all of you, too, hopefully, maybe early next week.
Okay, that sounds good. Our next meeting, I think, isn't it at JSM? Or do you want to have one phone meeting before then?
I was actually going to suggest we have our big cause research cluster dinner on Sunday the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Do the six of us want to sit down at some point and, like, actually have our next meeting in person outside of that dinner?
I would love to.
That'd be fun.
It'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm free every night. Right there. I arrive in Denver on the – I'm actually arriving on the 1st, and I leave on the Thursday night. So – and I'm free anytime in there.
So, yeah, Sunday night's our cluster meeting. Wednesday night is the section on stat ed business meeting that I'd like to go to.
Okay.
I don't know if Monday, Tuesday night. I don't know if we want to pick a time now, or I'd be happy to do that.
I think we can pick a time now in that way, because there's a couple people I'd like to get together with. So if I know when I'm already busy, that would be good.
Right. Do we want to do it over dinner one night? Do we want to do it later in the evening, earlier during the day sometime?
I'd rather not schedule it during the day because, or during the conference hours, because my days are looking pretty full from all the different things that I want to attend.
Your lunch flow is open usually from 12 to 1:30.
12:30 to 2 or something?
12:30 to 2, excuse me. I think that's more correct.
We could do that.
A lunch would work better for me than dinner. My husband's coming along, and so he might want to eat dinner at night and not sit through a Saturday meeting.
You're saying he cannot eat dinner without you? Is this what you're...
Well, no, he could, I suppose, but
no.
He already has a couple nights when he's eating without me, so...
I think we can go with lunch.
Which day?
I think you're lucky that your husband is even willing to go to a stat time.
He wants to go to Denver, so...
There you go.
For me, Monday or Tuesday is good.
Likewise.
I'll open either day at lunch.
Fine with me.
Bob, do you know of anything?
I'm just thinking, you know, I think both days, Monday or Tuesday, is fine by me also. Just looking at what I've got on my schedule for sessions, I'm chairing something all morning, this meeting within a meeting, and I really don't know when I'm done, but I assume I'm done like 12:30. But they might be giving me lunch. I'm not. It's probably fully unclear to me. So give
them
that.
Tuesday
would be better.
So let's do Tuesday.
Tuesday's good. Yeah, I'm chairing a session Monday morning too, so Tuesday's good.
All right.
Okay. So we say we meet at the registration desk?
I think
sure.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
hopefully we'll see.
Or earlier?
At 12:30, because I think, there's not a stat ed session that I know of going till 12:30, but I think there's a 10:30 to 12:20 session each day.
The stat ed session Tuesday morning is research on using the SATs test.
Okay. So how about 12:30 then?
At the registration desk on Tuesday.
Okay. This is on Tuesday.
Yep.
Yep.
August 5th.
Got it.
And then do you want us talking about the rest of the test, or do we want to hold off till next time? What's people's schedules?
I'm free. I can stay on.
I can stay on.
I can.
Great. I can.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we move on to, where are we, on SD1.
Yeah. I thought that worked pretty well.
I thought it worked pretty well, but in reading through the question again, I found it a little difficult to think about because we were talking about estimating variability. And then we're talking about variability of the standard deviation, so basically variability of the variance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that, but is that a concept that students have thought about or been taught?
Well, they did pretty well with it.
Well, but I think they answered it assuming you were talking about a mean.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I've never in a Stat 110 class talked about the sampling distribution of a variance.
Yeah, I think when we say whose sample standard deviation probably differs most from the population parameter, I'm sure they're all thinking that the population parameter we're talking about is the mean. So you're all talking about how accurate the thing.
And that should apply to both the mean or the variance, so it doesn't really matter. They're technically talking about the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, do we want to make the question, instead of saying the population parameter, to make it explicit? Or do you think it just goes too far beyond where we want to be?
Could we just say the goal is to estimate the average amount spent on movie tickets this summer? Whose sample mean probably differs most from the population parameter?
I think that would make it a cleaner question.
It still gets, at least in my mind, it still gets at what we want to know.
Good suggestion. Go to cross out the variability in the second line.
To change variability to average. And
yeah.
Then whose sample mean probably differs the most from the population mean. Do we want to say, or the population parameter?
I'm happy leaving it a population parameter. I mean,
okay.
I mean, we could say population mean to be explicit about which parameter we're talking about.
What would it make any sense to be comparing the sample mean to some other
population
parameter?
No, but I think they the population parameter they were talking about. Some of the, I'm pretty sure they were talking about the mean, even though it makes no sense to compare the standard deviation to that. I'm pretty sure that what Michael said is true, that they were actually answered the whole question thinking of means and not in terms of variability.
Well, but would there be any reason to keep it population parameter, and why not say population mean? It just is clear or explicit.
You know, no matter how you – what's interesting about this one, the way it's worded now, I'm just looking at one particular response from the group from Monaco, where Michelle on line number 10 says, because the smaller the sample, the bigger your SD, so a bigger sample will result in an SD that is closer to population parameter. Since Alice has a small sample, hers is very different from the population. There's some correct reasoning in there, but there's also some statements that aren't absolutely true.
Yeah.
The smaller the sample, the bigger SD is not correct.
Right. What it is the smaller the sample, the more variability there will be in the sample standard deviations when you consider them as a distribution. Or at least that would be something that would be closer to some correct thinking. And if you look at some of the other responses, they could be talking about the sample mean or the sample standard deviation. And then there was one other one. So to me, those responses wouldn't necessarily change whether you change it to sample mean or left it as standard deviation.
Right.
I'm just being a little devil's advocate for a moment.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right, but I think that the context that they'll be more familiar with is if we make it the mean. I don't think it may, reading through these answers, it really could have been either one.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense to me, too.
Okay.
So the last sentence, then, would be, whose sample mean probably differs most from the population mean? Or do you want to stay with parameter?
It doesn't matter to me.
I would lean toward mean, but I could be persuaded.
I'll defer to your leanings.
Likewise.
Okay. I think it's just more explicit.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, to go on to SD 2 and 3. This is a very informative one for me to really understand how many people didn't get get this at all when a lot of people chose, as Monaco, chose graph T.
Yeah, I was surprised at that.
But a couple people chose graph T because there's only one sample. Sample size one, so there's only one. Only one bar. I thought that was kind of scary. But
yep. That's a lot in the one on the stage.
Leaving that D in there did bring that out. That's
yeah.
Major error in reasoning that I would never would have even crossed my mind.
No, I was thinking, well, we shouldn't have left that in because nobody will pick it.
Yeah, I think I remember picking it in and saying, I need another graph to fill up the page, so let me put that in there.
So we start with D2. What we're really hoping that they'll get here is that the idea of sample means for size 1 should look like the population.
Right.
Correct. And I tried to make it clear that D is the only one that looks like the population.
But if I look at Winona State, there's a whole bunch of people that said D.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Monaco, likewise, there was 4 people said D. Half the people who responded said D.
You think they don't understand what's going on?
Question.
I mean, in terms of sampling many times?
Well, I think there's two things here. One is the fact that we're sampling. Two is the fact that we're using histograms to display the results. Interesting to think about, are they not understanding the histograms or are they not understanding the concept of sampling?
Because even here, I mean, choosing D makes no sense when you look at their reasoning because they keep saying it's D because there's one sample illustrated in that graph. Well, if there's a frequency of over 500, that answer makes no sense.
Yeah, you know, because there's only one possible outcome, that doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
That's a great diagnostic question. You know, but so what does it mean? What are they thinking?
And they're not distinguishing, some of them might not be distinguishing sample size from number of samples.
Sample.
Right.
In fact,
I'm thinking we should add, because in the question, it's on two different pages, these two. And in the first, on page 7 here, when we say, each of the other 5 graphs represent possible sampling distribution of sample means for 500 random samples. Well, the answer that a lot of them give makes it clear that they're not thinking in terms of 500 random samples. So I'm wondering if we should repeat in SD2 which graph represents a sampling distribution of sample means for 500 samples of size 1.
Yeah.
Just to remind them 500 samples.
Yeah.
And
I would even say for 500 samples each of size 1.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I like that. One other thing. There was a student, and I didn't write this in the summary, but they underlined sampling distribution of sample means for samples, and then they wrote weirdly worded questions. Not a big deal, but we do say it a lot. And, I mean, technically, aren't they just distributions of sample means? They're not really.
They're not a sampling distribution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we could take off the word sample.
Yeah.
I'm sampling out of there. Just say a distribution of sample means for 500 samples, each of size 1.
I like that better.
And likewise for SD3, which graph represents a distribution of sample means for 500 samples each of size 16?
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, to their credit, at least they were consistent.
Yeah.
So student 2 on when says there's only one piece of data on the graph, so D. And in question 3, well, I thought it would be a graph with 16 bars, but I didn't see one.
Yeah,
and even the one for me, student 4, question 3 is it's D because there's just one sample in that graph. And then for graph number 3, graph B, because we can see here the data is mainly centered between 5 and 20, which is close to 16. What in the world that means, but they're equally as nonsensical.
Yeah.
Right. Now, let me ask you guys a question, because in in looking at this problem once again after I saw the student responses and thought more about it, do you guys know what the right answer is for SB3? Because there's some discussion about A versus E.
It's either A or E.
Well, it can't be E because there are some means that are out. 18, I think, is a mean, and that's extremely, extremely unlikely. But it's a subtle difference.
Right. Dale's correct.
A
is a distribution of a sample size of 16. E is actually a mixture model of the correct sample size with 100 observations from a sample size of 2 to add a little more spread to the data.
But if a student picks E, oh, sorry. Are you there, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, so correctly speaking, A is correct, E is not correct, but I'm not sure if E is a little too subtle for the students to pick up on.
To me, if a student picked E and they gave a good explanation, I wouldn't be so upset about picking the E, I guess. I don't know. I guess now when I look at it, I can see the tail, but...
Yeah, it's hard. The tail is really low, too. You have to really... It doesn't really catch your eye when you first glance
at it. Right.
So is this a...
make that one more obvious. We could make that tail maybe a tiny little bit wider.
Great. So that's what I was going to ask. Do you want me to make it longer or higher?
I think higher.
Higher.
But okay. If you...
You could make it a little bit more bumpy.
Yeah. Michael, well, is there any problem? It won't be something truly generated from some process.
Well, it is. As I said, it's a mixture model. So right now, 400...
If you change it in the way that's being suggested.
Right. I mean, all I'll do is I'll make it, instead of 400 to 100 ratio, I'll make it 300 to 200 ratio.
Okay.
So all the small bars and the tails should be double the height.
What if you just made it a sample size 4, each sample of size 4?
You know, I tried that, but it actually became quite
symmetric already.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so clear to me. 4 versus 16, it wasn't immediately obvious to me when I looked at them that there was a difference. Which one was a sample size of 16 and which one was a sample size of 4, or maybe one was 16 and one was 60, who knows?
Well,
I don't think the students would have been able to differentiate that.
Yeah, one would have to be able to make the distinction, well, to calculate the standard error, I guess.
Correct. And so I think that's why I moved away from the sample size of 4.
Hmm.
And I think, I can't find this student now, but there was one response talking about E and saying, person's kind of indicating, this is what I would expect. It still has a bit of a skew to it.
Yeah.
And so I think if you can make E so that it is a more pronounced skew, it's going out there and it's narrower but has the characteristics of that original population, but that's a stronger distractor and one that gets at that thinking there. And as Dale pointed out, they would not be considering how extreme those type of results would be. And it would be also interesting to compare responses to this question to responses to earlier one that got at sampling variability. See, is there any consistency in people's reasoning, which I think you'll find that there's not. At least that's been our experience.
Well, see, to move it ahead on this then, so Michael, if you're able to generate a revised E, that would be good to get it to us. What I'll do is I'll take our notes here and send them around really very quickly, and if we can get feedback on it, we're about ready, we could put it up on the, on the WISE site, but if I just send my notes of what changes we made, and you take a look at it, and other things may occur to you, too, when you see it in that revised form, and get it back to me fairly quickly, that would be great. I think we'd have a more or less final version then quite soon.
So are we each going to revise our questions, or how are we going to best do this? Are we going to use Google Docs? What's the plan?
Well, let's see. What I'm suggesting, I think, is that I would just take our notes today and send you a Word document with the tracking feature in it of the changes. And I could just email it to everybody. and then you could respond back?
Sure.
That works for me.
That works great. Misunderstood. Thanks, Dale.
Thanks. Okay. Well, so we wrap it up then with that the next steps to take are to get something to Tisha if we've done something, and to also think about doing writing some possible interview guidance, possible reasoning lines that we talked about, particularly for the first two questions, to go towards multiple choice or towards a series of postulates so that we can discuss them when we meet in August, and then plan to meet on Sunday the 3rd and then Tuesday the 5th for lunch. Does that sound right to everybody?
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Sounds
okay. Well, we'll see you then, and we'll be in touch, Tisha. We will not leave you hanging.
I'll be in touch, too, as soon as I get everything done.
Okay, thank you.
My goal is this weekend, but because it's this weekend, it'll probably be like Wednesday of next week.
That sounds very good.
All right.
All right, well, I'm going to say goodnight then to everybody. Thank you very much.
Good night, Michelle.
Good night, thanks, everyone.
See you soon. All right, good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Please stand.